discussing the transcendental body, the sarupa of the jiva in relation to the external and internal practices of Radha Nuga Bhakti. So in Madhyalila chapter 22, Sanatana Scripture's 9th verse 150, Iste Saurasiki Radha Paramavishtata Bharat Tanmayi Yatpavet Bhakti Sattva Ragatmikodita. While one becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his natural inclination is love, is fully absorbed in thoughts of the Lord. That is called transcendental attachment. A devotional service according to that attachment is called ragatmika, or spontaneous devotional service. And that's the devotion of the eternal residence. And the verse which is quoted here is verse 157. About this conception. This is also from... No, this is just...
Baya antar ihara duita sadan Baya saraka dehe kare shavana kirtan Mone nija sitha deha kariya bhavan Ratri dine kare braje krishnara sevan.
Remember we said the other day about Ratri Dine, about the day and the night, one must end it through the Christian mentally conceived. So this is the verse. There are two processes by which one may execute Radha Nuga Bhakti, external and internal. Baya antar, ihara duita sadhana, dui means do, two types of sadhana. Baya saraka dehe, kari shravana kirtan. Baye, externally, very easy. The sadaka, in his dehi, dehi no shminyata dehi komaram yuvanam jura, right? In his body. So the sadaka deha, there's the sadaka deha, and then there's the siddha deha, right? Sadaka deha we're sitting in, this body. And the siddha deha is our perfect body, spiritual body. I mean, spiritual body is vastu. Not this city, but anyway, this is one way of approaching that. Baye sarakadehi kari shravana kirtan. So in our external body, our sarakadehi, we practice hearing and chanting. Mane nijastinadeya kariya bhavan. Ratri dine kare braje krishna sevan. Prabhupada's translation. There are two processes by which one may execute this Radha Nuga Bhakti, external, internal. But the advanced devotee externally acts like a neophyte and executes all the shastra conjunctions, such as hearing and chanting. However, within his mind, in his original purified self-realized position, that's how Prabhupada translates it, Nijasiddhadeha, he serves Krishna Vrindavan in his particular way. He serves Krishna 24 hours all day and night. Mane nijasthira deha kariya. So if you look at the word for word, mane means mind, nija means own, sthira deha means the spiritual body, kariya bhavan, thinking of his particular bhav, sevana, braja, and vrindavan. So this is, there's two aspects. If there's just, in other words, Radha Nuga Bhakti really means the internal cultivation of the mind, thinking of the Lord throughout the day and night. And there's another verse. The seva sadaka rupena siddha rupena chatrahi tad bhava lipsana kariya vraja lokana sarata. The advanced devotee who is inclined to spontaneous loving service should follow the activities of a particular associate of Krishna Vrindavan. He should execute service externally as a regulative devotee, a sadhaka, seva sadhaka rupena, as well as internally from his self-realized position, or siddha rupa. He should perform devotional service externally and internally. Maybe some questions or comments? It's kind of a lot of preliminary things here.
Thank you.
how to follow that eternal resonance of Vrindavan, it's told that as sadhakas, we follow the sadhana of the Rupa Goswami, because we're Rupanugas, and Rupanuga is following Rupa Goswami. So we should follow his external activities as Rupa Goswami, and follow his internal his mood of service, and even meditate on the particular services that Rupa Mandiri is rendering as Rupa Mandiri. So that's why Rupa Goswami has written various books for us to cultivate external and internal devotional service. He's written Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in two parts, which involves the sadhaka with external service, rules and regulations, and also internal service, and Ujjala Nilamani, and of course Stavamala, and so many other books, which help us understand what is this, what does Rupa Mandiri do? What does Rupa Goswami do? So that he is meant to be our guide. Then the specifics of how we will actually serve, that will be revealed within us as we follow the example, his example. And then we follow our Gurudev, because once the same question was asked Srila Prabhupada, and then he said, well, who's that resident of Vrindavan we should follow? And Prabhupada said, you should follow me. By constant meditation, the sadhaka makes the whole Braja Leela live before him. He enters into that Leela in his meditation, and by serving Krishna according to the particular bhav or mode of bhakti adopted by him, he lives in the ecstasy of enjoyment in that service. In the course of time, the mentally conceived transcendental body becomes the real transcendental body. Narottam Das Thakur says that what the devotee desires and meditates upon in a stage of sadhana, he actually attains on its completion. In other words, your sadhana becomes your sadhya. That's in Raghava, that's in Prema Bhakti Chandrika. The contemplated transcendental body is just the transcendental body proper in the making. That's very nice. In other words, you're meditating on a particular body. So what you meditate on becomes your reality. That is also there in the material world. You meditate on a particular body, you become attached to a particular body, you develop the desires along that body, and that's your next body. And Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, because he's talking about how you change your body. In the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, do you want to know how you change your body, how you get your next body? Here's how you get your next material body. It is determined by your bhav. What is your smaran bhav? What are you remembering? Remembering means thinking. Thinking, feeling, remembering is a mental process. Thinking, remembering. So throughout our life, Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, tyajat yanti kalevaram. Tyajat yanti kalevaram. When you tyajat, when you reject and throw away and give up this kalevaram, this deha kalevaram sharira, this body, then what's the next body you get? It's determined by yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. What is your smaran bhavam? What do you remember throughout your life? So throughout your life, if you're thinking of just eating all the time, just eating, food, where's food? You know, day and night, you wake up and you eat, and you go to sleep eating, and you're eating in your car, and you're stopping everywhere and eating everywhere, and you're always thinking, I gotta eat. Then you're thinking of that, and then Krishna arranges, oh, you need a body for eating, Baba. You need a body which you can eat, because you just absorb your smaran bhav, your bhav. Your bhav means your affection, your attitude of inclination, your affection, your attraction, your pulling, your bhav. So Krishna has so many bodies to get offer to you. He'll offer a very suitable body so you can eat anything and everything and anywhere and anyhow. My pig's body is quite suitable for that. You can eat any time, anywhere, anything. You can eat cabbage 1 second and other unmentionable things the next second. You can see the pigs in Vrindavan give you a graphic experience, because you throw out some very nice thing that cows would like to eat, they'll eat that too. You just throw out a bunch of vegetables, they'll come and eat them up. They don't have any discrimination, they'll eat A to Z. Cows are very particular. The cows will smell something first, smell it, not eat it. Very particular, because they're in sattva-gun. They discriminate. Sattva-gun means discrimination. It means intelligence is acting on the platform of discrimination. That means sattva-gun. No discrimination means no intelligence. So pigs aren't very intelligent. They eat everything and anything. So if one can utilize this psychological phenomenon of how the mind becomes attached to what it thinks of, thinking, feeling, willing. So we think of something in this life and we become attached to it and we create that body within us, by or above. So in the same way, you can take that conception or that phenomenon of the mentality and take that same mind and apply it to transcendence. And that's the platform of Raghunuga Bhakti. That you conceive within your mind the spiritual form, your spiritual form, which you have, which is the form which expresses your bhav. You have form and substance. So there are two things. You have thought and then you have form. Sometimes we have the idea in psychology of thought forms. So form appears first as thought. And then it takes a more solid reality in terms of form. So thought, when thought becomes solid, it assumes a form. And when thought is not solid, it is thought. So as you think about your form, you attain that thought that you have becomes a form. So you think about eating all the time, then you get a form to accommodate and to express that thought. A ghost, a Buddha, we have Buddha Rani and Queen of the Buddhas, and Buddha Raj, the Queen of the Bhuteshwara is the name for Lord Shiva, he's the controller. Buddhas have thought to enjoy, but they have no form, so they're very frustrated, very unhappy. But thinking generally creates form in most cases. So we think of our spiritual form that expresses our bhav. We want to love Krishna as a mandri or serve him as a mandri in a particular that form. So we're thinking of that form and thinking of those different pastimes which express the loving services to the Lord, and you need some form to do that, because the Lord has form. Krishna has a form. So then you get that form in the next life, something very close to it. That's called siddha, deha. And then in that siddha deha, you serve the Lord in the material world, and finally you refine all your bhavs. This is explained in Gita Mala, and Siddhi Lalasa. There's eight prayers in Gita Mala, Siddhi Lalasa, and explains the refinement of the bhav of the soul, of the sadhaka. As his bhav becomes refined, then he finally enters the personal, intimate service of Radha and Krishna. So that goes on in the material world, where Radha and Krishna are having their pastimes. So the bhav and the sentiments and the mood is all refined very particularly and purely, without any trace of mundanity or selfishness or any contact at all with the material energy. Then when one leaves that siddhadeya, he attains his vastu siddhi. Vastu means his eternal, the very substance of reality, the vastu, the truth of his eternal identity, becomes fully developed, and then he enters the spiritual world to live forever in that transcendental body, serving the Lord according to his inherent bhav. Is that alright? You follow? You understand my language? As Gaura Govinda Swami would say. Do you understand my language? You know, that's great. So, as to the mode of practice of Raghunuga Sadhana, Rupa Goswami says, which is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we just read it, Seva sadhaka rupena, siddha rupena chatrahi, tadbhav valitshu na karya, braja lokana saharata. Those who desire to attain prema, which will enable them to serve the Lord according to the bhav which is dear to them, should follow the brijvasis as sadhaka in the physical body, and a siddha in the transcendental body suitable for that bhav. That means we follow Rupa Goswami and Rupa Manjari. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said that the sadhaka of Madhurya bhav should, in his sadhaka deha, physical body, follow the line of devotion of Brijabhasis like Rupa Goswami another Goswami, to Braj. And in a Siddhadeya, he should follow Radha, Lalita, Vishaka, and Rupa Manjari, etc. We've said that already. A transcendental body, the sadhaka, first appears in the mind of the guru. Now, this is what we want to discuss. This is a very interesting point. This is some different ideas that are given. How one realizes his spiritual form. This is the whole point of why we want to start this discussion. The transcendental body of the sadhaka, means it's your spiritual body, first appears in the mind of the guru. The guru tells the disciple or sadhaka all about its form, age, color, dress, etc. It's called ekadash bhav, the 11 symptoms of the eternal form of the devotee. 11 things, the nam, the nam, vayas, vayas, vesh, the age, the dress, the vasta, the place of the seva, the service, the parakasta, the inclination, there's all different things, 11 things altogether. These are also mentioned in Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani. You've read that book, Harinam Chintamani? That's there. Then, after receiving that information about his spiritual body from Gurudev, the sadhaka makes a mental picture of it, and he thinks it to be his real body. With that body, he always serves Radha and Krishna in his meditation. The transcendental body, which first appears in the pure mind of the guru, which is made of Shuddha Sattva, cannot be imaginary. But the guru does not directly make the sadhaka realize it. He describes it and makes a picture of it on the mind of the sadhaka, which is material. The picture thus made on the material mind must be prakriti or imaginary, not spiritual or real. In other words, it's a sadhana, a practice of sadhana, and the spiritual master whose mind is shuddha, his qualification is he has to be a pure devotee. His mind is made of Shuddha Sattva. Therefore, the Supreme Lord, who knows the actual spiritual form of everyone, he inspires from within the heart the spiritual masters. This is the form of your disciple. So that form is seen, the actual form is seen within the mind by the guru. And then he describes that to the disciples, and the disciple begins to think of that, although he has not seen it yet. He's not actually seen it in his inner eye, in his mental eye. So he uses the word imagination. In other words, he tries to imagine it within his mind, but he's not actually seeing it. And by that practice of thinking, it's an active, voluntary practice of thinking. Like you can think of so many things. You can sit down now and think of your place where you grow up, or think of your parents, or what do they look like, or my father. And if you think deeply, if your contemplation is very deep, then actually the form will appear in your mind. A form that you have contacted in this world, if you think deeply of it, you can capture that form in your mind. For example, your father. Say you saw your father a year ago. He has a particular nose and particular eyebrows and forehead and body. If you think deeply enough, you have to cross over all the layers, the superficial layers of the mind. That form will manifest within your mind while you're conscious. And that is what's going on all the time when we're unconscious and dreaming. We see very clearly. Oh, last night I dreamt of my father, my mother, my boyfriend, or girlfriend, or whomever. And I was in this place. I remember I was in my hometown. I was going down the street and I saw the supermarket and the car dealer and the Audi dealer and the, you know, this thing and that thing. And I saw my school and there I was. I was in you know, my school, and I was playing tennis or this or that. So it's all very clear. And you wake up and it's like, it just kind of evaporates. Hey, wait a minute, what happened? So in the subtle experience of dream, we see very clearly form. But when one, because what meditation is the same alpha waves, proper meditation, conscious meditation, you create the same mental vibration of one in sleep. Let's call alpha, beta, and gamma. There's different brain waves that they measure, and they use these three terms, A, B, C, or whatever. And they find that when one is meditating, then he creates a certain kind of very mellow state of the mind. So therefore, it is a very straightforward scientific explanation of the functions of the mind. If one meditates in a very cool way, while conscious, he can see forms of this world. That's the point. Now, taking that same idea, if you meditate, a form is described to you in words by Gurudev. Now you meditate on that, certain eye colors, certain shapes, so many things. And eventually, if the meditation is deep, of course the mind has to be somewhat pure to meditate. Most people's minds are so scattered they can't even meditate on their mother and father. What's your mother and father like? Well, I have to think about it. Let me think about it. Oh, you know, they say, wait a minute, let me think about it. And they close their eyes. Well, my father, yeah, he's like this. What color is his hair? You know, they go from an external thing. Well, he's this tall and he's this hair. Well, describe his eyes. Describe this. Describe that. And then, you know, they start meditating more and more deep. Well, he's like this. And when they ask questions, well, does he have this or that? And they go, well, wait a minute, I don't. No, yeah, he doesn't have that. And they ask so many questions, and you can start. Then all of a sudden, you see if it's deep enough. You see even while you're conscious. I think you understand. It's not some phenomenon. I mean, it's a reality. This is what's told. The mind, the sadhaka is sadhaka. He's practicing. His mind is still impure. It still has a narcissist. So the guru, at certain point, when that sadhaka has some adhikar and some eligibility for such meditation, for such smaran, Krishna arranges it to allow that form to appear within the mind of the guru. Then the guru is seeing, judging the disciple's eligibility, then he has the adhikar to do such meditation. He says, now look, listen. And of course, two things go on, which you see in Jiva Dharma. One thing is it comes down from Krishna to Guru to Sadhaka, and the other thing, it comes up from Chaita Guru to Sadhaka to Guru. Chaita Guru is super soul. So there's a upward pushing of the identity of the spiritual form of the Sadhaka, which express the form which will express his inherent bhav or ras with the Lord, and it's coming down from Krishna. So the sadhaka, as he practices Krishna consciousness and associates with particular deities and hears particular pastimes of the Lord, he will become inclined or attracted to a particular bhava or particular deities due to the natural inclination of his own heart, which is established already by the Lord. The Lord wants every jiva to love him in a particular way. So when purification is there, just like as the night starts to disappear, and it comes closer to sunrise, which is what we call dawn. There's some light in the sky. The sky's become a little, there's a lot of darkness, but you say, wait a minute. You look out, if you're sleeping outside on the roof or something, you have no watch or clock, you look out and say, wait a minute, it's not dark night. The stars are there, but they're not as bright as they were when I woke up a couple hours ago. It's very dark, but the stars are very faint now. It must be coming closer to morning. You can understand by various symptoms. You know, you understand. So the same way, as you start to become uncovered, what is your bhav? What is my bhav? What is my love? What is my attraction for God? Now you don't even know about, you know, what is it, God or whatever. But gradually, when one performs the sadhana, the bhakti sadhana, then these things start to become understood. So when Gurudev, he sees, okay, now you're purified enough and aware enough. So the sadhaka may say to Gurudev, oh, I'm feeling inclined. My bhava is coming within me, an affection and desire to love the Lord in a certain way is coming. And I'll say, yeah, that's very nice. Carry on. Keep reading like that. And he may know. He may be seeing the spiritual body, but he says he can understand his sadhaka is not ready. So in consultation, this is Jiva Dharma, in consultation with that sadhaka, with that disciple and guru, the guru will say, oh, you're inclined in this way? Oh, then you meditate on this Mandri Roop, you're underneath the Lita Sakhi. Oh, you're in this way? You meditate on this Sakha Roop, you're underneath Sudama Sridham, the Sakhas. This is Jiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it comes from up from the site, from Chaitanya Guru. Krishna was in the heart of the disciple who reveals the bhava that he wants that jiva to serve and love him in. And then the actual form itself, the specifics of the form will come down through Guru. Because Krishna will enlighten, because Guru, that's his function. So in the Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami, it is told in Bhakti Sandarbha that generally the spiritual master, the Diksha Guru, he will take the disciple all the way throughout his three identities. Or through, he'll reveal these three sambandhas, sambandha, avideya, prayojana. So the first sambandha is their definition. He'll teach who is God, what is God, who is God, and then what am I? Am I the body? Am I the soul? And then what is the spiritual world? And then first is who am I? I am a soul. I'm not this body. But then more refined is I am Krishna's servant. But then, well, now I know Krishna. Now I know I'm not this body, I'm a soul. But who am I in the spiritual world? What is my identity there? So all these identities, all these sambandhas will be revealed by Guru through various mantras, through various initiations, through teaching and revelation, as we're hearing here. So he will take you from the first identity or sambandha that I'm different from the body, to the idea that I'm a servant, to the idea of what is my eternal loving service to the Lord, my spiritual body. Who am I? Who am I here? Who am I there? What am I here? What am I there? Any questions on this? Our mind is such, if we've seen the form of this world, and if we sit down in meditation, we can again see that form very clearly in our mind. Now, so we had some experience with it, and we can recall it in our mind if our mind quiets down enough and we meditate deeply enough and think over deeply. So now, what happens is that the form that expresses the bhav or the ras, just the Krishna prema, the ras is in the heart of the jiva. In other words, if there's madhurya ras and there's the Lord wants that particular jiva to serve as manjari, then there's a form, a manjari roop, and a specific one that the Lord wants that jiva to assume, to develop. So that form will appear in the mind of Guru, as is explained here. And then Guru explains that. So then he explains so many details. He puts in your ear, you hear the details. The color, complexion, and the dress, and the name, and the eyes, and hair, and everything, and ornaments, and so many things. And so now you've heard all those things. Now you try to think over those things. And as you think over all those things you've heard, very deeply, you will start to see that form in your mind. There's two types of learning. There's learning by experience, and there's learning by hearing. You experience your father's form, and then you can meditate and see it. But if someone describes very clearly the form of your father, even if you haven't, or the form of somebody else's father, even if you haven't seen them, if you think over all those details that they've told you, oh, he's this tall, and you start thinking, oh, this person is tall, and eventually that form, a form like that will be seen. There's a story in a Krishna book of Usha. Usha and, who was it? Who? Abhimanyu? No. Aniruddha, yes. Aniruddha and Usha. Aniruddha was the grandson of Krishna. He's a son of Pradyumna, is that right? Krishna's son is Pradyumna in Dwarka, and he had a son, Aniruddha. So Usha was having dreams of someone she never met. She was dreaming about this wonderful prince. And Chitraleka, who was an artist and a tantric, she was a tantric, and she was also an artist. Chitra means art or drawing. So she asked Usha, she said, Well, can you describe who you're seeing in your dream? So then she started describing. And then as she described it, Usha drew pictures. I mean, excuse me, Chitraleka drew drawings. She says, is this a person? Because he started drawing pictures of all the famous princesses and princes and men that she had known. So she was hearing the description by Usha and just drawing that. And then she said, and then she drew so many drawings like that, and then she turns, and then when she showed the picture of Aniruddha, Usha started palpitating, her heart started palpitating. She said, yes, that's him, that's the one in my dreams. She said, oh, that's Aniruddha, he's a famous person, he's Krishna's grandson. Anyway, don't worry, I'll arrange for you to meet him. So, there's some similar thing here that we're discussing, that she had never seen him, but she was able to see, but she could recognize a drawing of him, confirm that this was her, the person of her dream or meditation. So, the idea is that we hear these details of our sarup, and because we're still materially constituted within our mind, we can't actually see. But we think of it, and as we think of it more and more, then it starts to appear. We start to see. And then it becomes so clear to us that we can even have someone paint it very exactly by detail. Make a painting of it. Like in the case of Narayan Maharaj, Chaturani painted his guru's sarup and painted his sarup. Is that right? Have you seen Mundri painting? There's some paintings Chaturani did of the Mundri form of Narayan Maharaj and the Mundri form of Kesha Maharaj. Because he's seeing it and he told her, you go like this, and he just told her. And she painted it. He said, not like that, like this, like that. And the guru does not directly make the sadhaka realize it. He describes it to the sadhaka and makes a picture of it on the mind of the sadhaka, which is still material. The picture thus made on the material mind of the sadhaka at this point is still prakriti, somewhat is not spiritual because the mind is not yet spiritual. Even though the material mind assumes the shape of the thing, which it always contemplates, it says we must bear in mind two things. The first is that the mind, material mind, assumes the shape of the thing which it always contemplates. The Bhagavatam explains, if on account of love or hatred or fear someone is wholly absorbed in thought of something, he assumes the shape of that form of that thing. There's an example given of a type of bumblebee, the bringi. He catches hold of an insect and he takes that insect inside the hole in which it lives. That insect, which is caught by the bee out of fear of the bumblebee, in other words, the bumblebee captures one insect alive and he stuffs them inside his cell, like a honeycomb. They have like cells, honeycomb, little like hole. He puts them in there, buries them in there, like buries alive. And out of fear of the bumblebee, that insect is always thinking of it. And he leaves his body, he dies completely absorbed in the thoughts of the bumblebee. And the next life he gets the form of a bumblebee. This is in Bhagavatam 11th canto, chapter 9, verse 22 and 23. You can see in our Bhagavatam, that's also there. Whatever form which the sadhaka imagines himself to be while meditating on Krishna automatically becomes true. In Priti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami also explains the same idea. The second point is that bhakti itself is a function of sarup shakti. Sarup shakti means Krishna's very own energy, right? Sarup shakti means Radharani. So bhakti is the halo, right? Radharani is bhakti devi. She's a personification of bhakti, which is actually no different than prema. But prema is the energy of the sort of shakti of the Lord. When that prema, that sort of shakti, that prema shakti or ladini shakti takes form, which we heard the other day, that form is Srimati Radharani. So bhakti is a function of the internal spiritual energy of the Lord. While we are engaged in hearing and chanting or any kind of bhakti performance, our mind and the senses involved in it are partly spiritualized on account of their identification with sarup shakti. So our mind is material, but when it's the whole idea of the iron and the fire. right? We talk about Krishnaized. This is iron. But you put it in a fire, it becomes like fire, right? So the mind is material. But when you put it in the fire of spiritual energy, you have that mind associate with Krishna, his name, his form, his prasadam, etc. Then that material mind becomes transformed. It contacts Swarup Shakti. The name is Swarup Shakti. Krishna's prasadam is Swarup Shakti. Krishna's deity is Swarup Shakti. Krishna's dhamma is Swarup Shakti. Balaram is Swarup Shakti. The dhamma is the transformation of the Swarup Shakti. It's Balaram. So when the body and the mind perform service and they contact this Swarup Shakti, they become spiritualized. And as long as they stay in contact with Swarup Shakti, they become more and more in fire, Krishnaized. It's like the iron. If the iron stays in the fire, it becomes one with fire. It loses its identity of iron. If you take it out of the fire, then again it becomes iron. So if you immerse your mind in Krishna's service, and your body in the holy dham, and all these activities in bhakti, everything becomes purified, becomes transcendental. If you take it out, then again it can resume its material quality, to a certain extent, depending on how much it's been transformed by how much contact the mind and body have had with Swarup Shakti. At a certain point, which is different than the analogy of the iron and fire, is that the materiality of the body vanishes. There's no more material mind. There's no more material body. But the iron is always iron, although temporarily. So the analogy has its limitation. The iron is always iron, but while it's in the fire, exhibits fiery qualities. But the body and mind, which are material, when they're contacting devotional service and the spiritual energy of the Lord, they're gradually becoming totally transformed and losing all their material quality. Eventually you have your Swarup Shakti. You become Swarup Shakti. You get your spiritual body. There's no more materiality. Then you leave this world of materiality and enter into the spiritual world. Iron is always iron. It never becomes spiritual. It's the analogy, it becomes like fire, but it doesn't turn into fire, so temporarily. So in the beginning, we're material and a little bit spiritual, then a little more spiritual, a little less material, then a little more spiritual, a little less material, and finally, no more material at all. The mind is no longer completely spiritualized. And then when that point comes, then the Siddha Deha is realized, your spiritual body is realized. And then you can no longer bear the threshold of loving exchange that you have with the Lord. So you leave this world to go to the other world where Krishna is. Then you get your fully pure spiritual body. This is all technical things, and everyone's very tired, so everyone's half asleep. Is it right? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Maybe tomorrow.